So yeah, on this Halloween weekend, we are all, just going through ups and downs about the difficulties in the world, and coming to meditation to center ourselves again, calm. But yeah, ma many people have been describing just experiencing just different kinds of uneasiness, that even if it's not something, in the front of your mind, just it's been a hard time. So yeah, with all the us and them that can go on in the world, there was this theme of what I'm going to talk about tonight, that's been in my mind for a long time, but it seemed like a really good time to follow up on it. Just the many of us hold more than one religious practice inside of ourselves. We can maybe be blending them, or we came out of one religious tradition we grew up with and then came to Buddhism. And you may or may not feel moved to do something about what's going on in the world right now, or you may want to and not be sure what. But we can always do the work of just checking for ourselves about any divides within ourselves. So I have been just having such a interesting time talking to a bunch of different people about their journeys through whatever upbringing they came out of, and how they found their way to the Dharma, and how those things do or don't blend with each other. So I'm gonna tell you some stories that I've heard from people from different backgrounds in the talk tonight. But I just wanted to frame things with the Dalai Lama's teachings. He's just promoted religious tolerance and peaceful coexistence as well as anyone alive that I can think of. The posting for the talk tonight, there was the quote from him: "All major world religions have the same potential to create harmony, peace of mind. All religions agree on love and compassion." So yeah, he encourages us to learn the value of other traditions and to promote harmony in the world. It's a quote from him: "You may want to borrow and incorporate methods from other religions, like that's all fine in his book." And he, maybe surprisingly, I know that he's said this often, that he encourages people not to go religion hopping, like in any kind of aversive or impulsive way. It's a quote from him: "It's better to keep your own religious faith or tradition to avoid possible confusion." So he's not going out and trying to convert a bunch of people into Buddhism, which other religious leaders really appreciate about him. And then he says, "Then if you feel Buddhist approach is the most effective, still think thoroughly before changing." And then if that's the way you want to go, he says, "It's your right to change." And then just continuing the quote, this is all from a talk that he gave on the 8 verses for training the mind. He just opened the talk with this. And he's encouraging us: don't be critical of or vilify a religion you turn away from. Avoid that. That is not effective for you and is no use for humanity. Respect others' views and rights and the value of other religions. And he says we need faith and conviction to follow Buddha Dharma, and that it must be integrated through practice, not to be a cliche. And then talks about three core essential aspects of Buddhism. An instinctive perception of infinite altruism, universal compassion, and understanding the deeper nature of reality. He says, cultivate this, an instinctive perception of infinite altruism. So, just the generosity of existence, universal compassion, this the bodhisattva way, and understanding the deeper nature of reality. Cultivate this. So yeah, really moving into Buddhism, like really doing it in a way, like I really appreciate what he's saying about practice, being thorough in practice so that you're not just being a cliche of Buddhism. So anyway, he's just describing, the possibility of changing toward the direction of Buddhism. He's just giving us a little bit of a map there. So, for my own story, I grew up super, super Catholic. My parents met at Catholic University in DC. They both went there and met soon after. And not just Catholic, but specifically Irish Catholic, which is its own identity, its own history. Went to a grade school that was associated with Catholic University and it was taught by the nuns that were connected to Catholic University. So yeah, we it just seemed like just such a obvious basic thing that it was everywhere. The Christianity was everywhere, and there were some people who were a little different from us, but mostly Christians. And then we also knew a lot of Jewish people, especially my parents worked with a lot of Jewish people, and we especially did holidays and went on vacations with this Jewish family that we would trade off. So I got to go to celebrations for Yom Kippur or Hanukkah or Passover celebrations, those kinds of things. And then they came to our house, and the best ornaments we got over the years were the ones that this Jewish family gave us to hang on our tree. So I was blessed with a lot of tolerance from what my parents passed along to us. But I grew up during a period where there was a tremendous change happening in the Catholic Church. So just the second time in the history of the Catholic Church, the Second Vatican Council, were for years between 62 and 67 or something like that. There were gatherings in order to update the church, and it was only the second time it had ever happened, so it was a really big deal. So I grew up with this very old style version of Catholicism, with the mass said in Latin and these very strict rules that were quite arbitrary, and then they got changed. So just as an example, in my youngest years, you had to fast all the way from midnight the night before if you were going to go to Mass and have communion in the morning. And if you didn't fast that during that period of time and you had communion, it was a mortal sin, meaning if you didn't confess that sin before you died, you would go to hell. There were things like that that were so ancient and I took them seriously, and there were a bunch of them that you had to be watching out for or whatever. And then all of that changed, which is a really good thing that they changed. There were a lot of things that changed for the better, and saying the Mass in the native language of people in different places around the world, all of that was great stuff. But as a kid who had just learned all this old stuff, and then it's like, okay, that stuff that would seem really scary and heavy, like, don't worry about that anymore. We got new rules now. Like that was began to to erode my sense of the faith I was supposed to have, that I was really trying to have. It was like, wait a minute, I can't do those inner gymnastics to keep, the rules keep changing. Like, how, what was this based on? So I think that was the initial feeling that this isn't working for me. And then I think there was always this underneath, not quite conscious awareness that women weren't equal. Women didn't have equal, couldn't take an equal part in the religion in a lot of ways. So I think all of those things were there for me. And then just in the whole, all the changes that were happening in the 60s, it began to seem like social issues were much more requiring my spiritual attention, like, war and racism and things like that just seemed much more like where my attention needed to be than in church. So, sometime in my teen years, I stopped going to church regularly and ended up coming out to San Francisco because I was really looking for something that felt like it was comfortable for me, like I was with my people. I certainly felt that much more when I got here. And I, in terms of like where I was headed on my spiritual path, it's like there were probably like five books on Zen back then, and that was it. Like in the late 70s, there was like this handful of books to read, and I read all of them. And just reading about the Beats and their writing and their journey and the way that Buddhism was in their lives and their writings. I just followed all of that. But it was a long time before I became a regular meditator, and really it wasn't until I found my way to insight practice in 2000 that I did that. My first real dive into something, a serious practice came out of Buddhism was doing a Buddhist martial arts practice, Shaolin Su, that comes out of Chan Buddhism. My family, along with a lot of other things, it was like, oh, that's the West Coast. That's the California girl or whatever. It was always like a little strange. Like it went to them. It was always a little strange for them. And when I went back, like I was, I'm my the godmother of my first nephew, and they asked me to come for the official ceremony to be the godmother. And my brother-in-law was saying things like, "Oh, are we having the fox guard the hen house?" Because I was Buddhist and I was supposed to be guiding this young man in case their guidance wasn't available, that I would be guiding him in the ways of Catholicism or whatever. So but the most difficult part of not being a practicing Catholic was like my mother was never happy about that, and she would find all kinds of ways to keep poking at me about it. She'd think a long time about it and come say, you're ignoring your legacy, or she'd just get these notions and find I'm gonna find a way to tell her that she's going to wake up and come back to the church. So that was always kind of difficult. There was a moment where she was asking me more about my meditation, and I thought, oh, well, she's interested. And I started to talk more, and then I realized she was just asking me that so she could get around to telling me that thing that the Dalai Lama says that you shouldn't leave your religion that you were born into. That isn't all of what he said, but that's what she wanted to tell me, that even the Dalai Lama says you shouldn't leave your religion. So anyway, we had quite a dance about that over the years and really came to see each other's spirituality in a very healing way. Though she still would have preferred that I was a practicing Catholic. So and then only more recently have I done a deeper dive into the ancestral, the meaning of leaving this religion. When being Irish Catholic is like you descended from people who spent 700 years just taking all kinds of grief and all kinds of oppression and punishment for being Catholic, and even left Ireland and came here to feel more free to practice practice a chosen religion. I feel it more like, oh right, like after all these years of them defending that and holding to that, and then we're here for a few generations, and I'm like, oh well, I'm done with that. So I feel that, I feel that. And it took me a long time, but I've really taken a clue from Jewish friends who would often say, oh yeah, I don't practice Judaism, but I'm culturally Jewish. And it took me a long time to come around to realizing, oh, I'm culturally Catholic, that I'm never not going to be culturally Catholic. Like, you can take the girl out of Catholic school, but you can't take the Catholic school out of the girl. And that's fine. And certainly my parents were both social workers, and the early years of social work, and especially Catholic social work, was really radical care of people. Just a really a radical notion what started it. So I grew up around just bodhisattva ideas. Like, those were instilled in me through Catholicism before I got to Buddhism. So there are a lot of things that come very naturally to me in Buddhism because of the religion that I was raised with. So anyway, those are I just wanted to put my story up front about the journey I've been through, and still holding these two streams that sometimes stay separate on two tracks, sometimes interweave. And certainly, if I'm going to connect with my ancestors, like going into a Catholic church and lighting a candle is a good way to do it. That's I don't want to lose touch with their wavelength. So, and then I talked to Eugene because I was remembering a really powerful story I've heard him tell a couple times, to ask him if it was okay to tell this story, and just seems so relevant right now. And he was fine with that. But how he found his way to meditation was directly linked to his Jewish upbringing, which wasn't a strict Jewish upbringing by any means, but when he, this is like, maybe 35, 40 years ago, he was going through a really rough patch in life. That's often what brings people to a spiritual awakening or a spiritual transition. And he was in Israel and went to Jerusalem on Yom Kippur to the Wailing Wall. And the Yom Kippur is the Day of Atonement, and was checking himself for, what am I atoning for? And it was that his heart had become so hardened by the difficulty that he'd been through. And then at the Wailing Wall was just asking, so what do I do? Like, what's the next step? And standing at the Wailing Wall, he got the message, you need to meditate. So his journey into meditation came directly out of something that was very much turning towards his religion of upbringing. And yeah, he just said, yeah, I'll always be Jewish, which is it's yeah, it's funny how that is, such a thing, definitely for Jews, that it's like you're connected to your ethnicity, though it's not across the board ethnic, like everybody's not the same. Yeah, anyway, it's I don't know that other religions quite have that the same way, that people can be all over the world and be quite secular, but still feel very connected to this, the Jewish identity, the Jewish history, all of that. So that, yeah, I'll always be Jewish is, he's not the only one that says that or feels that way by any means. A few other stories that I talk to people about. One Dharma friend is was raised Southern Baptist and was very gung ho. Maybe sort of the cheerleader in her family, like, hey, we're going to church, right? If people were like not sure or whatever, that she'd be encouraging people that way. And then her mom committed suicide when she was 12, and there was a message from the religion that you couldn't ask for God's forgiveness if you committed suicide. So if you couldn't ask for forgiveness, you couldn't be saved and you wouldn't go to heaven, meaning you'd go to hell. And that just, understandably set wrong with her. Like that's, something's very wrong with this. So she stuck it out until she was old enough to take off at 18, and then just turned away from that and was was open and seeking, but it took a while to come around to finding Buddhism. And the way she found it was that she decided she wanted to study poetry. And so she looked at universities that teach poetry, and she found Naropa Institute, which was the first Buddhist university in the United States. And they had a poetics program, and they said something about being a contemplative school, and she wasn't quite sure what that meant. So she signed up and she went to Boulder, Colorado, and the first time she meditated was in a poetics class with Allen Ginsberg leading the meditation at the beginning of each of their poetics classes. So that's how she found her way to meditation. And she said just the revelation of see how she said this. Just slowing down and taking a breath, like that was revolutionary, and learning over time how to gather her own inner resources. She had her mom's suicide was not the only one that she experienced, so she had that, was carrying that. And I asked her, after turning away from the view that she was getting from Southern Baptism, like how did she view that now? And there was just a completely non-judgmental attitude about suicide, that it's a it's a mental health issue, and that people just didn't have the access to the resources they needed right then, and that everybody was doing their best. And so for herself, like she knows that she would never do that because she wouldn't want to cause that pain to the people who were left behind. And that was just saying, she still has a lot of respect for and connection with the religion she grew up with. There's a lot there that she still takes a lot of strength from. And just that all everybody's in the same boat of just wanting to be happy, no matter what their religious denomination is. But she was especially expressing appreciation of how Buddhism doesn't try to go and get converts, and that she kind of careful about the things she talks to her family about, but it was bringing to mind a story that I think it's in Jack Kornfield's book, A Path with Heart. I'm not, anyway, that could be wrong, but about another woman from an evangelical background that went on retreat and then went home and was very concerned about how this was going to land, or how she was going to land back in her life around her evangelical family. And wrote back to tell what was happening and said that something like they hate it when I'm a Buddhist, but they love me when I'm a Buddha. So just that sense that this friend was expressing as well is like, yeah, I just walk the walk and talk the talk, and don't try to convince anybody of anything. I just be it. I just practice it and do it. It's in 12 steps they talk about that attraction, not promotion. That it is something really lovely, for me as well, to be able to come toward Dharma practice was really dependent on that. Nobody was trying to get some hooks into my brain that were going to be hard to get back out again. Nobody was trying to tell me, we have the answer and you really need it. It was just like, here, the door's open. You can leave some money in the Dana box if you want to, and nobody's going to vibe you if you don't. And yeah, all of that open door feeling really made a difference for me. And a number of people commented on that about that I talked to about Buddhism being that way. Yeah, and then I talked to a friend who practiced with us for years. She comes sometimes to the sit still, but she's Iranian American, and she grew up in a very different Iran than the one now. As she put it, I grew up wearing mini skirts and bikinis. That was fine, and then it wasn't. Like in 79, the Islamic takeover changed everything. But she actually grew up like not with anything particularly religious, but very spiritual. And her mom had grown up in an area of Iran that was very influenced by Zoroastrian, very ancient, pre, you know, existed before Buddhism, Zoroastrianism. And she described it as being a lot like Buddhism, that we have a choice, but just that sense of choice between, you know, they'd say good and evil, but between wholesome and unwholesome, we'd say in Buddhist practice. And a lot of the practice was right thought, right speech, right action, so that it was quite similar to the Eightfold Path. And Buddhism was very easy to fall into for her when she got there. But yeah, once the Islamic takeover happened, like everyone had to convert or say they did. She was saying, if they tell you have to be Muslim, you say I am Muslim, and you had to wear the cloak of Islam, is what she said, or face really severe consequences. So yeah, there's just that example of taking on the look of being a particular religion that happens for so many people for you know, through history, through very, very for various reasons. So she moved to the US and didn't have to stay in that world that wasn't going to work for her. So she was fortunate to be able to move here, and ended up marrying a Polish Catholic man that she practiced with the family. She went to church, but was always a little uneasy about that, especially, you know, for her. She was just felt like the hierarchy where women weren't equal was not so good, and felt like some of the other women she was seeing seemed like they were brainwashed into thinking that was okay, and she was always uneasy with that. And then she was, you know, later on, they were breaking up, and it was a really hard time. So again, a spiritual crisis, where she was like, I need some guidance. Where do I go? What do I do? And she went to a bookstore in the mission and was looking in the spirituality section, and was pulling one book down, but another one fell and landed in front of her. And it was a book by Sherry Huber, who's a Soto Zen teacher. And that seemed like a sign to her. She picked that up and took it home and just kept going from there, kept pursuing more about Buddhist practice until she found her way to SF Insight. And then that was like 20 years ago. And yeah, she was saying it didn't, to her, Buddhism didn't at all feel like abandoning something she'd grown up with, that it was just embellishing it. And yeah, at the heart of it's just like, you know, be with what's actually happening rather than try to change things. And you do what you can. And then she was quoting her mom saying, leave things to the universe. So. And then one more Dharma friend here is somebody who's actually a trans man, and he was raised between the US and Israel, moved back and forth several times when he was growing up. His parents had fled the Holocaust, and they were. When I first asked him about what he grew up with, I knew he was Jewish, but I asked him what he grew up, and he said, "I was raised atheist," was the first thing he said. And then he said, "We were secular Jews, like they went to synagogue on Yom Kippur, a couple days a year." And then later on, he said, "I was raised by a mom who was a secular feminist." So just this notion that a lot of people grew up with something that wasn't an official religion, but was definitely a worldview that they were that shaped the way they looked at things. Later on, he married a non-Jew, and that wasn't a problem. And they had a son, and he was raising the son, and asked when the son was coming into his teen years if he wanted to be bar mitzvahed, and they decided that that's what they were going to do. So for the first time, he went to really dive into and go to a synagogue and dive into the practices. And said he'd always been curious about what is this experience people have of God, of this being that you have a relationship with, was really curious about that. Though it never clicked for him. Over a couple years, he said he really couldn't stand the notion of being the chosen ones. Like, why would somebody be chosen and somebody else not chosen? That really felt abhorrent to him. So he stopped doing that. And again, it took a long time of yoga and other practices, spending a year in Thailand and somehow still not ever meditating. And then again, spiritual crisis of things that had to do with relationships, seeming this isn't going right. He was looking around for what was going to help, how to deepen a spiritual practice, and found a beginning meditation class at the SF Buddhist Center, that's the Friends of Western Buddhism, and said first time he sat down and somebody led him in meditation, he went, "Oh." Then he found his way against the stream when that was there over in the mission, and then never stopped from there. So another person who's been, it's just been in our lineage and other ones straight through ever since. He was just cluing me in a lot about how most Jews, both in Israel and the US, are secular Jews, and that it's the ones that are most religious make more noise. That's a lot of like what we're looking out at. It was just helpful to hear that said straight out. Yeah, and sometimes it's not the religious. I talked a long time here. I better get on to breakout rooms if we're going to do that. That it's not always a religious view, but even societal norms that get hooked in with religion. Like another Chinese American friend said, that's a gay man, said that he was in Christian practices with his family until the Marriage Equality Act was on the ballot, and he realized that all his family was going to vote against his interests. And that's what made him leave. So a lot of times it's these interpenetrations of things about race, gender, sexual orientation, and all those kinds of things. Well, thank you for going on this journey with me that I never really had a chance to be guided through myself. So thank you for being with me as I make this up while we go along. And as always in our practice, in our tradition, we end with dedicating the merit of our practice. So any benefit, any new awareness, any sense of integration, understanding of your own or other people's views, just appreciating, noting any ways that you may have been impacted that are good. And sharing that with all of your being and knowing that that process can continue, the integration or healing if it's needed, that can continue. And then gathering any of the shared blessings here among all of us. Gathering in our hearts. Letting that radiate out all directions into the world for all the ways that people are suffering. For everyone who's being impacted by war, violence of any sort, by not being allowed to have their own mind, their own understanding about things. Anyone who's suffering from any of those ways in society that we don't care well for each other, or that we harm each other. Wishing healing and freedom for all of us, for all beings everywhere. May all beings find safety. May all beings be at peace. May all beings be free. Thank you all again for your presence and for sharing with each other and me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.